medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest on-air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wobshall, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the Business Solutions Lead at Colas IS Support. With me this week and every week is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Hautcooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hey, Paul, what's new this week?
Hey, Chandra. Oh, what is new this week? Well, I'm back in the States, thank goodness. Actually, it's actually harder to get out of the States than it was to get back in. But anyway, thank you, government shutdown.
Ah, flight delays, huh?
Yes, yes. So I got to spend the night in wonderful Atlanta. Of course, I didn't get to see much of it because the flight didn't get canceled till 2 a.m. So I didn't get to the hotel till 3 a.m. And flight wasn't rescheduled until 5 p.m. the next day. So yeah, travel woes, but such is life, as they say.
But did you make it in time for your presentation?
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to go over to the Spanish Oracle user group in Madrid and present the JD Edwards roadmap over there. Landed early that morning and had enough time to splash some water on my face and put on a change of clothes and walk down to the venue and walk in and grab a coffee and walk up on stage and say, hi, how y'all doing? So yeah, it was quite fantastic.
Sounds like it.
I mean, it was fun. Good way to break the ice. If I fall asleep mid-presentation or I freeze, don't worry, I'll come back. But I might be a little jet-lagged at this point. But no, it was fun. And then after that, the Oracle Benelux user group in Utrecht, Netherlands, was up next. So I got to hop over there and present the JD Edwards roadmap and talk to several customers and partners about what's going on and what's happening in their world. And you know, we had that napkin idea in focus, that whole JD Edwards napkin, all good ideas started on a napkin. And I got several napkins when I was there, which was pretty neat. It's great to get out and talk to folks that some of which I haven't seen for a couple years and others that I'm meeting for the first time and establish new relationships and just interact with folks and see what they're doing with the product and hear their new ideas about what we could be doing. And so, you know, it kind of keeps that JD Edwards culture going, which we all know and love. So it was good. But what's new in your world?
What is new in my world? Just continuing to learn the ropes at my new employer, trying to learn all the processes, and there's a lot of them, and learning about, for me, I'd say even learning to deal with foreign companies, because this is the first company I've worked for that's been international on JD Edwards. So since the IS support role supports both the US and Canada, I've had the opportunity to learn some different things as well. So it's kind of fun. I'm enjoying
it. Are you learning any French along the way?
No, but there's an awful lot of French speakers in my company, being that our headquarters is France as well.
Well, Canada too, right? So you got,
yes,
you know, Canadians, yes, tend to speak that.
Yeah, I have not had to use Google Translate yet, but I know it's coming. I do get some emails that come in, you know, the top part will be French and then the bottom part will be English. I'll look at the French and go, yeah, didn't take that language either. And I took German. Not very helpful for me.
No, not helpful. Bonjour, mon ami. Je m'appelle Chandra.
Exactly.
And then all you have to say whenever one of your French friends asks you a question, you just say, je ne sais pas. Je ne sais pas. I don't know.
Je ne sais pas. I don't know. And one of my coworkers is from France, and I've been spending quite a bit of time with him. So getting that accent down again for me, because he also talks fast, has been fun. You know, it's good to have that cultural diversity in a workplace. Obviously, with lots of different countries involved, we have different accents everywhere. I have my own Minnesotan accent, so.
That you do?
Yeah.
Very cool.
So,
how about before we get into today's session? I mean, we're bouncing back from the marathon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Slowly building back up, ever so slowly. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to take a nice trek on the weekend before I came back, a nice 8-mile run around Vondelpark in Amsterdam. So that was kind of fun. And then when I reached Utrecht, I also, you know, in order to stave off the desire to take a nap, I did 4-mile run around the canals in Utrecht. Ooh. and took some photos. So I couldn't help but be, you know, I'm taking your advice. You told me when I got into running that it'll take you places that you typically don't see, that you never thought existed or didn't know existed or whatnot. And that's absolutely true. So I'm taking advantage of my newfound running career and exploring the cities that I go to with my feet, with my sneakers, so to speak. So I thought you'd be proud of that. But how's your running recovery coming?
Actually, it's going quite well. I've been feeling pretty good. Started lifting again. So with weights, yeah, not just body weight. So yay. And I did my first trail run in Colorado off-road. So it was very fun, except for the initial climb of like 400 feet was... It was fun. I mean, it was a beautiful morning. The sun was out. I think it was around 40 degrees. So it wasn't bad. It was lovely. And the dog loved it as well. She enjoyed the off-road running. I think she would have preferred if she could have been off-road off-leash. But, you know,
of course.
I was in a public
dog.
Yeah, an open public space. So I was like,
every canine would love that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we had a really enjoyable run and it was a beautiful area. I had been in that area once before, but I hadn't covered this section of trail. So it was really neat to see and some great views of the Front Range and could see Pike's Peak. So I was happy.
Very nice. All right. So what are we getting into today?
Well, we're going to pick up and talk a little bit more about form design aid. So the last time that we kind of talked about form design aid, we talked about what table does this application update and different ways we could find that using FDA. And so it occurred to me, does this also work in reverse? Like if I look in an application, where are these values coming from? Are these values calculated? Are they coming from a table? And this kind of came about because I was asked about an application, job status inquiry, where a user was actually trying to build their own report in a reporting tool outside of JD Edwards.
Okay.
And I was like, well, there's no table that houses those values. They're calculated when the application loads or runs.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I wonder if I can figure out how they're calculating. So maybe I could assist and help with a report.
So you basically took what we learned, what we went through in our last episode on FDA and tried to apply it to probably one of the most sophisticated applications that JD Edwards has. So you went from simple, straightforward, let me trace one single value through a couple of layers of business functions to a table, to let me take job status inquiry, again, one of the most sophisticated apps, complicated apps that we have, and let me apply this newfound skill right to that. Okay.
My rule is go big or go home.
Apparently. It's like, because if it works there, it's going to work anywhere, right? I mean, oh my gosh.
Needless to say, I was scratching my head a little bit. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And of course, and the difficulty for everybody's, I guess, benefit that doesn't know job status inquiry, we built this application effectively allowing the users to define what the columns are. So there's no real predefined columns in the grid. They're all user-defined columns that we then populate based on configuration, right? How you've got the system configured. And from an engineering standpoint, hey, it was a really neat project to like create this thing that could be so flexible, right? We're building an app that you actually don't know what you're going to display. You don't know where it's going to necessarily pull from, because not only do you let the users define the columns, but you let them define the formulas behind those columns, right? So even the calculations vary. So you've got layers of abstraction, if you will. I don't know that that's the right word, but
layers it's of not, complexity.
Layer of complexity. And so it's really not that straightforward. And of course, the way in which it was written generically. So when you crack open the app, you see user defined field one, user defined field two. When you go into the ER like we did last week, right, or the other week, you see that, you know, everything behind that is generic. Like, you know, where does the formula pull from? Well, we're going to call a business function. And you go into the business function and it's like expression one, expression two, expression three, and formula one, formula two, formula three. And you're like, what does this all mean? Because, well, it was written generically because it's all defined behind the scenes. And so none of it could be prescripted. It had to be done generically. So this is an instance where kind of skipping to the end. So that's my cheat code. I just skip to the end, right? Let's just skip to the last chapter, read the conclusion, and oh, I have the answer to everything. You know, that's the way I used to work. I cheated, right? Okay, well, that doesn't work very well here, because when you skip to the end, it's a bunch of gobbledygook that if you didn't read from the beginning, you won't understand what the conclusion says. You won't be able to interpret it. So
guilty. This,
yeah, it doesn't quite work very well. So you end up, it's better actually to go through the front door in this case and say, oh, okay, let me go figure out how you actually set this stuff up. And then based on the setup that you guys have in your system, you'd be able to discern, okay, what's the formula? Oh, it's 25. What is 25? Blah, blah. It involves yada, yada, yada. And you start to get a better idea. But this one, you almost have to, unfortunately, follow the process.
Yeah. Lesson learned. My question is valid, but maybe yes, not in all cases. That's my answer. And yeah, it is a matter of figuring out, okay, is this an application where we know that we have user-defined formulas coming into play? If so, front door is probably the best way to enter that house. But if we're looking at something where we don't, maybe it's going to be useful to be able to use FDA.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think last time we talked about, okay, where does this record get written to? So we know where to basically write a report to read. The opposite can be true too, right? You may look at an application and say, okay, where does that come from? It can definitely work both ways. Since that example was so extreme, did you have another example where you wanted to use FDA?
I did, actually. I was looking, if you go through work with contract history or P52250 and you mm-hmm. drill in to get to the contract billing line inquiry, which is P5222, mm-hmm. there's fields on here that display on the application that display, such as like retainage amount prior, retainage amount to date. And I'm like, well, I wonder if those are. I'm thinking those are probably not custom defined.
Right.
So maybe I should just use FDA to go start looking at if I can tell.
Yeah, I mean, you got two very valid questions. One is, oh, geez, are these going to be user-defined again? And I won't be able to know unless I crack it open. And if they aren't, will FDA tell me where they're coming from? So when I hear that, the first thing I think of is the first step you probably go through, or most people would go through, is, okay, well, let's first check to see if it's reading straight out of a table or straight out of a business view. So you pull up cross-reference, and you said it was P5222. So when you pull up cross-reference for tables used by an interactive application and you do that inquiry, well, there's nothing that comes up.
Yeah, I got it. I had zero results.
Right. And then when you do the same thing for business views used by an interactive table, once again, you come up empty, which is mm-hmm. great, wonderful.
Wah,
right.
Wah. So
no,
very
wah, wah, cross-reference, not helpful. So yeah, this is another instance where since those two things didn't pan out, maybe I just jump straight into FDA and let's go straight to the source and see if we can't skip to the end. So you pull 5222 up, contract billing line inquiry, you pull it up into FDA. And one of the things that first jumps out at me, I understand folks can't see the screen, so I'll just describe it. I see a lot of form controls and grid columns with this little turquoise triangle sitting in the corner. What that tells me visually right away is I probably have a business view attached to this that I'm actually fetching out of.
Ah, that's what those represent.
Yeah. So why that's not showing up in cross-reference, we'll cross that bridge later. But for now, that tells me, okay, there is a business view here. Now I can go into properties and find out what it is. I have a lot of other columns, though, that don't have that same color. They're yellow on the left and green on the right. Well, yellow on the left. It's the lower left-hand corner you want to pay attention to. And those ones that are yellow, those to me are not coming from the business view. So those are just data dictionary items that were added to the grid and are likely then being populated by another fetch from a table or populated by a calculation using the other fields in the grid, right? That's my suspicion right off the bat. Okay, so we wanted retainage amount prior, I think was the value that you were talking about. And when I scroll through the grid, what I end up seeing is I see the retainage amount prior. It's got that little yellow triangle, and that gives me a visual indication that it's probably a data dictionary field, not a business view field. Now, that being the case, if I select the form from my tree control and I go down to the grid property, I can see all the columns, even the hidden ones, by the way. So you don't have to just look at the grid. If you look at the grid, you won't see the hidden ones. You can see the hidden ones in the tree control. But as you go down through, you can take one of those, let's say, tax amount prior, which has the blue or teal or whatever that is, triangle. You can select that. And if you look at the properties, it tells you not only the data item, the PTAM, but it says F4822. So that tells you that it's coming straight out of the table.
Okay. So it's reading a table to get this one.
Right. So that's reading it straight from the table. But when you go to your wonderful retainage amount prior value, and I select that, it says TLTD as the data item, but notice that there's no table defined. So this tells me that it is a data dictionary item, that it's likely populated within the ER, whether it's from a business function call or whether it's a calculation within ER. Now we're going to go a step further.
Interested in learning how other JDE customers are driving success in their organizations? Join one or more of the JD Edwards Special Interest Groups, or SIGs, for informal conversation and community.
Bring your questions, find answers, build your JDE network, share and prioritize product ideas, and help influence product roadmap. To sign up, visit questoraclecommunity.org/groups.
Before we do that, though, again, further confirming how this application behaves, when I select contract billing line inquiry from the tree control, and I go to properties, I see right off the bat in my general tab, a business view field, and it tells you that it's using V4822E. So that tells you the business view that it's been using, which means now you can go to your favorite, second favorite tool, maybe, which is data browser.
Yeah. One of my favorites.
Yeah. So you can go inquire, obviously using data browser, using that business view, and you'll get an idea of the information that this app pulls back. So that's a good step. Now, another quick thing to check is the options tab. Within the options tab, it tells you whether or not it uses the business view. So you have several options or properties here. One is update on the business view. One is on the form business view. One is update on the grid business view. So imagine I can attach, depending on the form, in this case, I'm on a find browse form type. I've got a header, I've got the form itself, and I've got the grid. I can have business views attached to each.
Oh, wow.
So you can have different business views attached to each, or the same business view attached. I think you can only have the same, but anyway, I apologize. My point being that when you do an update, you can control whether or not the form updates on the form business view, on the grid business view, on both, on one or the other. That's the point there. But it also controls whether or not you fetch from those. So are you going to fetch based on the form business view? Or are you going to fetch based on the grid business view? If you see those options not checked, the fetch options, in other words, then it's not actually using the business view to actually retrieve the data. That doesn't mean it can't, you know, that doesn't mean we won't use the business view to update it, but we may not be using it to retrieve it. So again, just because you see that we have a business view attached to a form and a business view attached to the grid, and we see that we actually have those business view columns in the grid and on the form, doesn't necessarily mean that we're actually fetching directly through that business view. Pretty good idea that it is, but not necessarily guaranteed. So you want to check this tab to figure out whether or not it's actually pulling those values through the business view, fetching from the business view. Okay.
Cool. Thank you.
So we know that this is fetching from the business view. We know that the table is F4822. We know what the business view is. So we know all that, but we still don't know retainage amount prior. Where exactly is that coming from and what's the calculation, right? This is where I would go, once again, print out your ER for quick search capabilities and pull it up in Notepad and search for your grid column, which is the retainage amount prior. As you do that, you quickly get to some calculations that are occurring. So retainage amount to date is a running total, is what it looks like to me. So in the right grid line before event, we talked about this before, as each grid line is coming back from the business view before we write to it, we're taking some of the values and doing calculations off them. So we're calculating this prior amount to date. There is also a fetch directly from F4822, and it looks, from what I can tell here, I mean, there's no specific condition that controls it. So we pull it directly from the table F4822, the retainage amount to date. And that gets written to the retainage amount prior. And then there may be some additional calculations here that you can see that depending on what retainage you're using depends on which calculations actually fire after that. I don't know that we want to go into too much detail beyond that, but the point is at this point, you know that it's being pulled out of the table. You know that there's additional calculations. I would then start to maybe inquire on whatever the specific case is in your interactive application and run the app and look at the results you're getting versus the logic, so to speak, that you're seeing so that you can better interpret what's going on, right?
Because which is what I did. I did pull open the application. And in this particular case, I opened a contract and looked at the payments or the billing line inquiry for one of the vouchers and could see, okay, now I see exactly mathematically, I can see what it's doing so that I could validate that it made sense against the event rule.
Right. So again, because you're able to run the application and you have the data to go with it, now you have context for what you're actually seeing in the app, and that complements one another. And now it makes all the more sense.
As I always say, it was like trust but verify.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm not sure what other questions we have about this particular case. Lucky for us, this is much more straightforward than arguably than the first case, but seriously, it's more straightforward than your second attempt at JSI. But hopefully folks will find this valuable, that there are ways that without necessarily being a developer, without understanding coding, you can use FDA, you can crack it open, you can look at a few things to understand how the application is behaving and kind of inspect it a little bit so that you can gain a better understanding of what it does and where some of these values may be coming from. I can imagine if retainage amount isn't getting calculated, the retainage amount prior isn't getting calculated correctly, you'd probably want to go in here, take a little bit of a closer look at each one of those calculations that you saw and the conditions around them to try to understand, okay, what is causing this to happen? Again, you don't have to be a developer here. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, you can read this stuff pretty clearly. Do you agree?
I would agree. I am not a developer in any way, shape, or form, but it's clear enough for me to understand it. Right. Mm-hmm. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. Trust me. If I can figure it out, anybody can figure it out.
Okay. If it passes the Chandra test, then it's good for everybody. It gets the green light.
Good. Yeah. It should get the green light for everybody to kind of be able to do the same. So
very cool.
No, this was helpful. And I can see too, obviously, if we wanted to do advanced level, you know, form design aid class number 10. We could walk through the job status inquiry and try and figure it out.
Yeah, that's not the 101 course. That might be the 401. That might be the, you know, it might even be beyond that, to be honest.
It might even be master's graduate level.
Yeah, it's a graduate level course.
Yes, sure. Exactly. I think we'll hold off on that one. But I can see there's some other use cases I feel like that we might be able to dive into with Form Design Aid to help us in some additional troubleshooting. So hopefully we can be on the lookout for some of those coming soon to a podcast near you.
Well, and as I think we also talked, ER is ER, right? So we can take a look at named ER. We can look at RDA, Core Design Aid.
That one I haven't really spent any time in.
That can be another session for us, is to crack open one of those and take a look. I will just admit up front, not as schooled in reports as some. So I don't know that we have to go to the level of getting John Holder in here again to walk us through RDA and give us a master's level course on that. But I might be able to scrape us through a entry level course. We'll see.
Excellent. Because I can imagine, especially for all those folks out there that have started somewhere new and the company has a lot of custom reports, custom UBEs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can imagine that would be really handy spot to go look to be like, what does this thing actually do? What are we actually either updating or reporting on here?
Right.
Because it's really hard. Not everybody has, you know, all the documentation of all their custom UBEs in a good area, you know, in like a centralized area. So at least having something out there where we can empower our business analysts or systems analysts to be able to kind of go crack one of these open and look at it would be very beneficial.
I advocate this pretty heavily within my organization. The ability to reverse engineer is a very, very powerful skill set. Now, granted, some of the new AI tools can help us greatly with that. So maybe we get to the point where we have one of these sessions and talk about how we can use AI to further accelerate some of this and facilitate reverse engineering and comprehension of, because I think companies go through it all the time, right? They have turnover and the people that were there that established that customization may no longer be there. You know, what drove the introduction of that, the creation of that customization may no longer be there. And you got to pick it up and you got to figure it out. And these tools out there are tools out there that can help you do that. One other use case, just real quick, before we get to our Midwesternism of the day, I think folks out there that are using like form personalization or even form extensibility, there are times that maybe you crack that open and you look at it and you're like, wait a second, why don't I see this field? Like when I run the application, I see this field, but where is this? Wait a second, where is that coming from? Where is that? You know, you may have questions about discrepancies between what you see, what form extension and form personalization shows you. And this is where, again, FDA can help you understand. Being able to at least crack it open and go browse it is valuable, right? I'm not suggesting that you go change anything, that you go have to customize it. It's just, no, being able to look at this stuff to better understand it adds value.
I'm in. any way that I can use AI to help make my job easier, I'm 100% in. And so are our listeners, I'm sure, because they're all probably being tasked with something similar.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, let's get to that Midwesternism of the day. So we're continuing on our holiday theme foods topic.
Topic?
I guess okay. We'll go with topic.
Category.
Category. There category. We go.
I'll take holiday foods for 12 pounds, Alex. Sorry.
I like it. Well, let's hope that we don't gain 12 pounds over the holidays.
No.
Special K bars, a.k.a. also known as Scotcheroos.
Oh.
Yeah. Right? I don't know if you've had these before.
Hmm.
Yay? No? Have you?
Describe
have they showed up?
Them.
So they are made with peanut butter, chocolate, and butterscotch. And of course, typically they're made with Special K cereal. They are kind of a chewy bar. That topping is the chocolate, butterscotch, and peanut butter mixture. And they are quite delicious. So I have had them. I do like them. They are kind of addicting. I don't know what
really?
It is about. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they can be a little bit on the addictive side.
That's,
they are kind of yummy.
Not good. But then,
yeah, that's not good.
You did mention butterscotch, and that is a...
Is that a favorite of yours? Butterscotch?
That might be a kryptonite, if you will.
Ah, good to know. Okay. So not only will you not stop eating cheesy potatoes and green bean casserole, combine that with a Special K bar and, well, Pa's just not going to remove himself from the table.
No. No, that's where we hope that we didn't wear a belt, but instead we wore something with flexible waistline.
Elastic.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
All right. For questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at thejdeconnection@questoraclecommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles.
See ya. Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.